All right, I guess we'll switch gears here and talk about saline wastewaters. Give you, well, I guess I should acknowledge my cooperators. I'm from California State University, Fresno, and my cooperators are from the University of California, Davis, and Pablo Chilibroste from Uruguay. A very brief introduction to salinity and drainage problems on the west side San Joaquin Valley, and talk a little bit about some earlier studies where we evaluated forages for a drainage water reuse system called Integrated On-Farm Drainage Management, or IFDM. And then I'll talk about primarily about this grazing study, and where we're looking at the hazard for grazing beef cattle on some of the forages that are enriched in selenium due to irrigation with saline sodic drainage water. And if time allows, the depletion study that followed. Okay, the Westside San Joaquin Valley is shown here, and these soils do tend to be saline sodic, mostly due to the parent material, which comes from the coastal range. And where we have salinity problems, typically the soils and the drainage waters are also enriched in boron. And that can be a problem for crop production if you're wanting to use these waters for the drainage waters for irrigation. And we also have some problems due to selenium, which is a natural constituent in these soils and can be a problem if we're using these drainage waters and there's either exposure of wildlife to these waters or if we want to produce forages, there could be some problems for ruminant animals consuming those forages. So there's a long history of salinity and drainage management on the west side San Joaquin Valley. It is a very large irrigated area, and used to be that about 42% of that area was drainage impacted. Now, due to greatly reduced supplies of irrigation water, it's a lesser number of acres that have shallow groundwater. And for those growers who do decide to use subsurface drainage for salinity control, they have to reuse the drainage water either on farm or within the irrigation district, because a number of years ago there was a master drain to take drainage water out of this valley and a temporary holding reservoir in the Kesterson area, and due to the selenium in that water there were impacts to migratory waterfowl and fish, and therefore there are strict rules whereby you cannot discharge this drainage water into local waterways, so you have to reuse it. There are numerous salinity and drainage management actions that have been taken in this area. I'll just be talking about drainage water reuse for irrigation. And when we started into this, we thought of it as a wastewater and having large volumes of drainage water that we would have to get rid of. Now it's really looked as an alternative water source, particularly for forage production, because a large amount of animal production has moved into this area, and also because irrigation water supplies are tighter and tighter. So this research was conducted on a commercial farm called Red Rock Ranch, and since 1997 there is a demonstration project going on, essentially demonstrating this concept called IFDM, and it's a sequential reuse of drainage water whereby drainage water that comes from the freshwater irrigated areas of the farm, shown here in white, gets reused on sequentially more salt-tolerant crops, and until finally the final effluent is evaporated using solar evaporation systems, and there is the potential to harvest the salts. The grazing study, was conducted in this tall wheatgrass pasture and this creeping wild rye pasture. And an earlier study that we conducted, we were evaluating numerous forages for their suitability for these IFDM systems. And the field study and greenhouse studies were published in 2007. And the top candidates that came out of those evaluations were tall wheatgrass, Thinopyrum ponticum, and creeping wild rye, Lamus triticoides. And in those studies, we looked at the dry matter production, shown here in metric ton per hectare, and organic forage quality of the forages. And you'll take note that the tall wheatgrass in particular is very salt tolerant. This was growing in fields that had almost 20 decisiemen per meter ECE in terms of the soil salinity. and the creeping wild rye growing at a little bit lesser salinities. And in general, in those studies, we found that even under these highly saline conditions, the forages had adequate dry matter production, and the quality was reasonably good. When we get to the grazing study, you'll see the quality dropped a lot because it was, in these years, they were abundantly irrigated with saline waters, and during the grazing study, it was pretty much deficit irrigation because there wasn't much irrigation water being applied, there wasn't much drainage water available. But the thing that was of great concern was that, particularly at this ranch, it's a real hot spot for selenium, and so some of the forages were accumulating up to 10 part per million selenium, and generally the maximum tolerable concentration for animal feed would be 2 part per million in the diet. And just to show you that tall wheatgrass truly is very salt tolerant, in the second year of the grazing study, we weren't even sure if this pasture was going to really come back. And it did, and here you can see, I think with the lights it's hard to pick out, but the green shoots of the tall wheatgrass poking through the dormant material from the previous year and a lot of the salt that you see deposited on the soil surface. So the grazing study was conducted in 2007 and 2008 at that same commercial farm. And the objective was to evaluate the safety of grazing beef cattle on these high selenium forages. If we would cut the material for hay, we could control how much, what would be the selenium level in the diet. But with grazing, they would be solely consuming these forages. So we looked at selenium accumulation in the blood, liver, muscle of the beef cattle, evaluated their weight gains, and we really didn't get good estimates of the dry matter intake of the forage by the beef cattle due to the heterogeneity of the pastures. And we also then conducted a depletion study to see how quickly the selenium was depleted from the animal tissues. So for each forage, we had a 20-acre pasture, and that was divided into four paddocks, shown here. And so we had 10 beef heifers in for each pasture. They were divided into two replicate groups of five animals that grazed either the north or south set of these four paddocks. And in 2007, they were about 6 months old when the animals entered the pastures. They grazed for 190 days. In 2008, we had a separate group of animals. They were a little bit older, and we only grazed for 165 days because by the end of the season, there wasn't enough water to keep irrigating the pastures, and we needed to have them have material ad libitum. So here you have a picture of the creeping wild rye pasture when it's nice and green early in the season, and then when it's drier later in the season, tall wheatgrass pasture, and then the liver sampling on the beef heifers. We did sample everything, the irrigation water, the soils, and the forages for each rotation. And for the animals, we sampled the blood, the liver, the muscle, and then evaluated the weight gains. The blood was sampled most frequently, the liver less frequently, because there's quite a bit of trauma to the animals when you take that little piece of liver in the tissue. And the body weights were taken each time that we sampled the blood. So in terms of the water, much lower salinity and selenium than had been applied in earlier years, because again, there just wasn't that much drainage water. And some of the time they were irrigating with tail water because drainage wasn't available. And our selenium levels in the irrigation water were down from previous years. Previously we irrigated with about 500 to 600 part per billion selenium, and they were down to about 150. But these pastures were in their fifth year of drainage water application for creeping wild rye pasture and seventh and eighth for the tall wheatgrass pasture. So there was plenty of selenium still in the soil. This is shown here, the total selenium, and it was about up to 4 part per million for the tall wheatgrass pasture and around 2 part per million for the creeping wild rye pasture. And in terms of forage quality, in the second year, it was quite a bit lower than it should have been, in part because of less water being applied, and then with less drainage water application, the crude protein levels really came down because the grower doesn't fertilize these pastures, and with irrigating with drainage water, it has lots of nitrogen in it. But then when they started using the tail water, the crude protein levels really came down in the forage, and they were suboptimal. but the forages did accumulate selenium, and the tall wheatgrass had up to 4 part per million, not as high as in the earlier studies. So in terms of animal data, I'm just going to show 2008. You can see here that in terms of the blood levels of selenium, they increase very rapidly upon the animals entering the pastures, as did the liver. And this value here, 0.5 part per million, is the upper end of the normal range for beef cattle. And we greatly exceeded that with both the tall wheatgrass and creeping wild rye grazed heifers. And the same thing for the liver tissues. In terms of muscle, a similar pattern. Very quickly, the selenium levels in the muscle increased, and to a greater extent with the tall wheatgrass grazed heifers, because again, the forage had higher levels of selenium in it. And in terms of body weight gains, I'm not showing you the data for 2007, but the tall wheatgrass grazed heifers had acceptable body weight gains, in part because the forage quality was really pretty good. In 2008, with the lower forage quality, particularly low crude protein, the weight gains were not particularly good for the animals, neither for the tall wheatgrass nor creeping wild rye grazed heifers. Conclusions from the grazing study. These beef cattle that were grazing these selenium-enriched pastures, the blood levels increased dramatically from when the animals entered the pastures, 12.7 times greater. The final concentrations of selenium in the blood for the tall wheatgrass heifers, 8.5 times higher for creeping wild rye heifers. In terms of liver, we had similarly large increases over initial concentrations of selenium in the liver, and the muscle was pretty much the same story. The body weights I already explained. In terms of the depletion study, we expected the selenium to deplete the quickest from the blood, but as it turned out, it depleted quicker from the liver. And it might be that some of that depletion from the liver, that selenium was moving back into the blood, which is why we might have seen the slower depletion here. I'm going to skip the animal weight gains. In terms of the conclusions from the depletion study, I already mentioned that the liver selenium depleted the fastest. In terms of possibly using these type of forages to produce a value-added selenium-enriched beef, there are some human nutritional benefits from selenium. It can serve as an antioxidant and supposedly protect you against cancer. If you were to use that, you would really need to finish the animals off fairly quickly, because we found that the selenium, by about 60 days, significant amounts of selenium were moving out of the muscle tissue of the animals. And in terms of overall conclusions, in spite of the extremely high levels of selenium accumulating in blood, liver, and muscle of these beef heifers, we saw no clinical signs of selenium toxicity. So the data suggests that a one-year feeder cattle type operation, we could safely produce cattle with these type of forages that have up to 4 part per million selenium in the dry matter, using the saline sodic drainage water as an alternative water source for a chronically water-short region of California. But really, more examination is needed to investigate whether there were subclinical effects on the beef heifer growth and or if we might have compromised their reproductive potential. Our data don't allow us to really determine that. Okay, and I'll take any questions.
Thank you. We have time for a question, so let's see.
Could you comment on the interplay between deficit irrigation and drainage water? It sounds like with the trend for deficit irrigation, you're not going to have much drainage water to use for irrigation.
Right. There's, well, I could just putting together a pilot. I guess they're going to build it, of a large plant, and they're looking at that shallow groundwater that's really very low in quality and actually treating it and using it as a water source. So they may actually be pulling some of that water. It changes all the time, the way we view this and what the situation is. But should we go back to wetter years, and or if the water district secures a more reliable supply of irrigation water, they'll go back to irrigating more abundantly with the land that's left in production, and they probably will have drainage problems again.
Thank you. Thank you.